It was one particular book. I was trying to update a website so it looked a bit nicer. So I was reading about typography, you know, how you lay out characters and words and symbols on a page to make it look nice and to make it read well. And a friend recommended a book called An Essay on Typography, which had been written by a kind of an infamous English sculptor called Eric Gill. Mm. And it had this mark all the way through it. It looks like a P, only backwards, a capital P. And it turns out that it's a paragraph mark, and it's been around for a good 2,000 years almost. You can still see it in Microsoft Word. If you click it, then the spaces turn into dots, and at the end of lines, you see these little paragraph marks. And I'd read more about Eric Gill, and it turns out he was a very skilled artist and typographer, a pretty awful person, and I thought there's a story here. And so it became one of the marks I talked about in Shady Characters. So I just looked for other marks like it, which were a bit unusual. So not necessarily things like commas and semicolons, but the at symbol and the and symbol and the hash symbol and so on.
Yeah, and
I'm sure from there.
I'm talking to Keith Houston, who is the author of Shady Characters, and I know there'll be a few SMSs or questions coming through. So if you do have one while I've got Keith on the line, 0467 922 891 is our SMS number here at ABC Radio Adelaide. Keith, you talked about the at symbol and the hashtag symbol. Now, the at symbol we just know through email, but that's been around long before that.
It has, yeah. It looks like it was something that came about in sort of the medieval period. So if you were abbreviating a word, let's say a word that started with an A, you might write just the letter A and then a little bar above it, and that signified there's something missing from the rest of the word. And as people wrote this more and more quickly, it became the at symbol. And it looks like someone was using it as an abbreviation for the word ad, which means at. So I think they were talking about wine. They were talking about so many barrels of wine at a certain price. And this was in a letter that I was able to hunt down from, 1400 and something. So The at symbol, meaning literally at, has been around for a long time. Then nothing really happened to it. It just kind of lay fallow. It's a very, you know, if you're a merchant, then it was important. It wasn't important for almost anyone else until email came along, and the guy who invented email needed a symbol to separate your name from the computer on which your email address lived. And he picked it, and here we are.
And the hashtag as well, that seems like a relatively new symbol. Was that like something for numbers?
Yeah, the hash symbol has been used for lots of different things. The Americans call it the pound sign, and it actually comes from a very old Roman term, libra pondo, which means pound in weight, which was abbreviated LB. So if you're writing pound in weight, you still do that. You still write LB. And again, it had this abbreviation symbol, this little line drawn across it. And as you write LB with a little bar across it faster and faster and faster, it turns into the hash sign. Isaac Newton was writing hash signs effectively, or these LB things, which are halfway between LB and the hash symbol. So again, it's a really old mark that kind of fell out of use or didn't really have a proper use in, say, a book until Twitter comes along and it just explodes and it's everywhere.
Where do you think punctuation is going, Keith? I mean, with SMSs and tweets, I mean, we seem to be pretty much, the apostrophe is almost now optional in a lot of tweets, just because people are trying to cram a lot of information into so few characters. Are you worried about where it's going, or do you embrace the change?
I don't think I'm worried. I think certainly punctuation in tweets is a little bit endangered. I think, I mean, obviously emoji are pretty big at the moment. They're having a bit of a moment. And they work quite well in some senses. They convey a lot of information, you know, in both. You can use them as words, you can use them as punctuation. So I think I would expect to see much more of that. I don't think much is going to happen to punctuation in books. I think we will still be punctuating in the same way, more or less, in 50 or 100 years. But tweets, as soon as you start to shorten, as soon as you give people smaller and smaller spaces in which to write, then punctuation seems to be the first thing to give way, which is a bit of a shame. Apparently the period, the full stop, is now angry. I hadn't realized this. I talked to a guy at the Writers' Festival today. He was a younger guy, and he said that sometimes his friends would take screenshots of tweets that had full stops in them, and they'd send them to him and say, "Look how angry this person is." So this is new to me. The full stop is apparently quite angry and quite aggressive in tweets.
Well, the other thing that we're having now, especially in SMSs, is the overuse of the exclamation mark. I mean, people are now putting four or five at the end of sentences. Surely, Keith, you only need one.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Or if you're feeling particularly crazy, you can find the emoji exclamation mark, which is big and red and exciting and only takes one character. Use that. Don't use four normal ones.
We have a caller, Walter, who also has some info on the origin of the hashtag. Walter, what's your information?
Yeah, it's the etymology is being corrupted. It's actually a hashtag, and it derives from the hatching, which is the grid pattern on the handle of a rifle or the grip of a pistol. It's put in by a tool called a hatching tool, which is a pair of parallel stripes similar to an engraving tool. And that pattern is called hatching, and it's been corrupted into hash.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely right. Or in the same way that you might shade in a drawing by using, you know, drawing sort of parallel lines. And it's just because of the way it looks, because it looks like a set of parallel lines in this, you know, in a similar way to sort of cross-hatching.
What punctuation mark is on its way out, Keith? Because the semicolon seems to be unnecessary. Like, it seems to indicate a very, very long pause. Are there any that you think will just drop off?
I think the colon and the semicolon may be, they might be the first to go. As you're saying, they don't really, the colon has a much more well-defined purpose, but the semicolon, I think people sometimes find it difficult to use. I love it, frankly.
Is it just because you're a punctuation nerd and you love to throw it in? Because I read your website and there was a couple of semicolons on your website.
Yeah. Yeah, I think my editor wishes I would stop using them. I think you're probably right. I think the semicolon is maybe perhaps not long for this world. I think there are lots of other slightly odd marks that books used to be quite rich. You know, that they were typeset in a very careful way, so they'd have asterisks and daggers and double daggers, and you know, for footnotes, for example. And now, much more often, we're just using numerals, you know, the number 1, 2, 3, and so on for footnotes. So I think there's maybe some of the care that goes into designing books is disappearing, which makes me think that some of the more esoteric marks are perhaps also under threat to a certain degree.
What were the daggers? I remember those in footnotes. Were they a very old English thing?
They, as far as I know, are actually Greek. They come from a symbol called the obelus, which was just a horizontal line that was used to indicate a line of text that had something a bit dodgy on it. So an editor would use it. If you were, you know, the librarian at Alexandria in the 3rd century BC, you might draw an obelus beside a line, meaning, I think we need to correct this, or I think we need to take this line out. And some people started drawing it with a dot above it and a dot below it, so it looks like the kind of division symbol. And that seems to have morphed into the modern-day dagger, which is quite nice because the dagger has this, you know, this visual sort of aspect of stabbing the thing, of kind of saying, right, that's it, it's no longer needed, we're going to drive a dagger into it. So it kind of, I guess, reflects the way it was once used.
The ampersand has kind of had a rejuvenation as well through, you know, texting, obviously less effort to do an ampersand than an and. Do you know, this is a question without notice, Keith, but do you know the history of the ampersand? Because it's quite a kind of, it seems there's a lot of calligraphy going into it. It's quite ornate.
Yeah, it is. It looks as if the ampersand was, I don't know if invented is the right word, but it started developing out of the Latin word et, meaning and. And so the earliest known ampersand just looks a bit like a capital E and a capital T that have kind of collided. And this was found in a piece of graffiti in Pompeii. I was actually on holiday there a few years ago, and I tried to find it, but I couldn't. I was quite disappointed. But it just went from there. So in the same way that the hashtag grew out of the letters LB, just written faster and faster, the ampersand was the letters ET, again, just written faster and faster and faster until you have this kind of very abstract symbol. Although a lot of typefaces, a lot of fonts, the italic ampersand is very clearly the letters E and T. I think type designers have a bit of fun with it. You know, you often get very ornate ones, but it's very clearly the word et.
Wow, I didn't know that. Hey, we've got some calls, Keith. Margaret has given us a call. Hi, Margaret. You're talking to Keith. What did you want to bring up?
Yes, hi, Julian and Keith. The semicolon will never die as long as people are writing HTML. Because if you want to put certain characters into your web page script, you use an ampersand as the first character, then you put in whatever you want. For instance, if you want a degree sign, you put ampersand, D-E-G, and then a semicolon.
Wow, I did not know that. Thank you,
yeah,
Margaret.
No, that's absolutely right.
All right, well, good. The semicolon lives on. I've predicted its death far too soon. We have Teresa. Teresa, is it as well? Did you have a punctuation point that you wanted to bring up?
In proofreading years ago, if someone had made a mistake and then they changed their minds, S-T-E-T.
S-T-E-T. That's a punctuation mark, is it, Keith?
Ooh, I bet it's a Latin word that I don't know.
Okay.
It's great for shopping lists. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Teresa. As a punctuation expert, Keith, if you ever send a text or write something to someone, do they try and pick up a punctuation error? Is that a delight that all your friends have?
No, I think I think most people, as much as books like Eat, Shoot, and Leave want to kind of paint some people as punctuation sticklers, I think if you're emailing someone from your phone or you're texting or you're tweeting, I think most people have got a bit of a, you know, they allow you a bit of flexibility, the odd mistake, because you're trying to cram so much into such a small space. I don't know. There are certainly, you know, it's not great to see an obvious punctuation error in a book, but as you get towards more informal means of communicating, I don't think it's too bad. Even if I do it, it's rare that someone jumps on it.
All right, I could talk forever about punctuation, but I know you've probably got more Writers' Week commitments to go to. Thank you so much for joining me. That's Keith Houston there, and he's author of a book called Shady Characters, where you can read all about the history of punctuation and some of the more obscure punctuation marks. It is Jules Schiller right here on ABC Radio Adelaide.